Trumpet.
Hey! What noise is this? Wakes me from ruin's womb? Bless me. Tom. How brave am I become? Fame fixed upon my head? Beneath me, round, the figures of illustrious princes crowned, as well for goodness as for state by birth, which makes them true heirs, both to heaven and earth. Just six in number, and all blessed names. Two Henrys, Edward, Mary, Eliza, James, that joy of honest hearts. And there behold, his honored substitute.
Hello, I'm Robert Crichton, and welcome to the Beyond podcast. And you've just been listening to the sound of our prep before the first performance of our live reconstruction of The Sun in Aries by Thomas Middleton. In October 2021, we did an outdoor reconstruction of the 1621 Lord Mayor's Show, and part of that reconstruction involved performing most of the text with youth performers. You just heard the one original speech we gave to an adult, Daniel Yabbett, but now you will hear from the youth company itself. There were three performers, directed by Sam Plum. Actually, I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Sam Plum. I was the director of the youth contingent in the pageant.
Hello, I'm Charlie Beer. I am one of the youth contingents that Sam directed, and I played Jason in the pageant.
Hi, I'm Holly Giles, and I played Fame in the pageant.
Hello, I'm Quinn Scott, and I played Aries in the pageant.
So, a couple of weeks after we performed the reconstruction, I caught up with Sam Plum, Charlie, Holly and Quinn, and we discussed how they first were introduced to the text and how they found the process.
Well, I remember when I found out that I'd been cast, and we weren't really given much information about it. I knew that we were doing a performance in London. And then when we came to on our first rehearsal, Sam explained a bit about what a pageant was and stuff about that.
And the way I met these guys was through an outdoor performance at this school. And so I met two of them through that, and then I met Quinn through doing improv together. He's part of my improv group, and so there wasn't like a formal audition process, but I'd seen them performing outside, and I'd seen them performing in different contexts, and I thought they'd be great for the show.
Mm. Well, I seem to remember some kind of implication that it would be hot and sunny, which it wasn't. And yes, basically, what everything else were what the others said. So it was a pageant. I knew what a pageant was, but I'd never heard of Thomas Middleton before. And my first thoughts about it were basically when we got told what we were meant to do.
I was just incredibly excited, and
yeah, it was very exciting, but all the performances that I did before this pageant were more acting through our bodies, and obviously we used like body language in the pageant, but it was more kind of, obviously the stage was very small, so it was more through our voices, so we did a lot of like vocal stuff, which was very, very fun, very new for me.
Well, when I got the script, you don't even know the plot, so you have to try and completely guess what he's talking about, which isn't fun.
When I saw that I had two monologues to do, I was like, this is going to be something to do in the time. But I think it was a bit kind of nervous, like, this is quite a lot to learn. I've never learned this much without people, having a kind of table tennis conversation with someone in the script. You don't have anyone to rely on. You have to just rely on yourself with the lines and remembering them yourself. So I was a bit like, this is going to be a new thing for me.
Yes, because you've got a tower.
Yeah.
You didn't even get the option of moving. You had, it wasn't a big stage for the others, but you had
I had my arms, that was it.
A box to stand on.
It really did not make sense, because I was talking about, I don't even know now, just like completely random things. And like you said, there's absolutely no plot. So like, even if you try and interpret it, there's just no hope. So at first I didn't really know how to like perform it. But then Sam, darling, came along and helped me through all my troubles.
So, Sam, considering that, no one seems to know what was happening, how proud did you feel?
Oh, I'm glowing with pride. That's what I'm glowing with right now. I know what they mean. I think it is. It's really hard when you're working with a script like this, and you haven't got a gloss to follow, and also there isn't a storyline. These are three characters with their own story worlds that they're speaking at length about. And yeah, we did a lot of work on understanding what the meaning is on the level of the line. But there wasn't necessarily like the through action to carry it, which these guys are used to with their Stanislavskian training, where it's like, here's what I'm doing with my line to this other character on stage, because it's always about flattering the mayor. Mm. And I think the relentlessness of that objective is one of the impressive things about a pageant.
Yeah, did you try to flatter the mayor? He was there. I hope you played it all directly to him and ignored the rest of the audience, because you know, the show isn't about them at all. Just him. Did you play to the mayor, or did you also play to the rest of the audience?
Well,
there are some quite a few of my lines I directly addressed the mayor.
Yeah.
So I very much tried to make that clear what I was doing. But the rest I kind of performed to everyone, to like the general audience.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because if there was one saying like, "Oh, the mayor is so glorious, he lights up in the sky," or something, you had to direct it at him. But then as soon as you got the chance to include the audience in the story, then you could make it so everyone was interested and enthralled into the storyline.
Mm. Yeah, it was really fantastic to include the audience, actually, because especially in mine, and I think maybe Charlie's speech, there were so many references to things that the audience were doing, like drooping and not being able to stand properly because by my speech they've been standing for so long, that kind of thing. And so it was really fun to include the audience, actually, and let them know that they were still actually there.
There'll be a lot of people walking past in suits with their phones kind of looking at you.
Right. Yeah.
There was a number of them you didn't even notice.
Yeah. I noticed.
They'll be looking for their lunch.
So you worked in isolation with Sam, and apart from one Zoom session in this room, and then you're just sort of thrown on the stage on the day. I mean, how's the day overall for you? I mean,
it's a wonderful day.
You journeyed into London and got rained on. And it didn't always rain. I'm just going to just say for the record, it didn't always rain. I know all the photos make it look like it did, but it didn't always rain. The first 2.5 performances were dry. The last one, half of that one, was a bit wet.
Mm. Yeah.
It was the fact you got dry, really wet for the dress rehearsal and you were all ponchoed up. So yeah, your memories of the day.
It was great, actually. I love going on trains, love trains, which makes me sound a bit childish. But I still love trains.
I love trains.
Mm. No, you're wrong with trains.
Anyway, going down with everyone was really fun, and like the kind of just the whole experience of it, and like performing on a street performance and people kind of coming and going was really fun. And even though it rained quite a lot, yeah, it was a very, very good day.
Yeah, just a change from doing any kind of performance that you have an audience and the same audience for the whole performance. You have, like, you get to see lots of different people, and because the people don't have to pay to watch it, it's a nice thing that you're just doing it because you love it, and it's like, and also, I love going on trains as well, and just the fact that we played some games when we were going on the train, which was very fun, and then it kind of was like a bonding experience for everyone, where you got to know people through spending time with everyone. I think it was really awesome to get to know everyone through it.
I just like the whole idea of street performance. I genuinely prefer it to, not quote, normal theatre. I mean, I do like normal theatre, but there's something about standing on a stage just in the middle of a city and just saying lines to the public and watching them watch you, as it were, that you don't really get when you're inside.
We're almost caught. We're just waiting one person, but I'm just going to start anyway in terms of health and safety on this particular site. As you have already noticed, I'm sure, we have leaves, we have wetness, we have a relatively slippery surface. Do be careful. If you are travelling at a speed that is different to any other object around you, you may injure yourself. Do you understand that?
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. That's your primary health and safety thing that you need to be worrying about. The Whifflers are here primarily to keep the traffic flowing
around the audience. The audience we're going to encourage to gather around about here, leaving a nice clear line.
When it all came together and you're on that stage, I mean, what were you feeling? And did it all make more sense when you're actually in it, as it were? Or was it just, what's my next line and not worry too much about what else is going on? Because you have the music, you have the MC and the crier and those other figures doing stuff and side carries and stuff. So, did it make more sense when you actually did it, or did it just make as much sense as it did before?
I think it made more sense when you were there because you saw everyone else doing it, so then all your cues were ready and everything that you'd sort of been told briefly about was there and prepared, and you got like all the information you needed about it. And then as soon as you stood on stage, it felt like you were doing a play, so I feel like it gave you some context and it made it feel more clear.
I think it really helped to kind of bring it all together and to have kind of to know what lines are before yours and what lines are after yours, and kind of know where your speech fits in and know like how, like what your position is in relation to everyone else. So yeah, I think it made a lot more sense when we're actually down there.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think it's much easier doing theatre when you have other actors to interact with and bounce off of, rather than just standing there and saying a speech, basically.
Because you've got dialogue actually addressed to you as well, because Fame is up in the tower and the new standard awakes and speaks at you. And obviously you have to stand there and listen. So it's the fact that you also, like the Lord Mayor, have to stand there and be and listen to things.
And also...
Did you like his speech? Did you follow his speech? Did you know what was going on?
Yeah, and it was part of the performance because you had to like act like you were listening as well as listening, show it as a kind of extreme version. So going like, yeah, I'm awake, because you're still acting, you're still on stage to be looked at. And so I think it was actually quite enjoyable to be able to see it whilst being on stage as if we had some dialogue that was together.
It was the sort of the final bit of the experiment for me, because I was interested to know throughout, is this Thomas Middleton on a money spinner writing something that is going to pay quite well, but that isn't necessarily going to be the thing that he's remembered for? So he's not necessarily investing all of his playwright skills in it that he might in like another play. Or will we be able to see, oh, this is definitely written by someone with a lot of craft? And so I was waiting to see how it would all come together when your bits mixed in with their bits. And I was really struck by how like practical it is, in terms of we get a big speech from one of these young people, which tended to be, from my experience, like one of the sort of showstoppers. You have like a showstopper speech from Jason, showstopper speech from Fame, showstopper speech from Ares, another showstopper speech from Fame, interspersed with music, which keeps you focused, and well, in our production, bits of kind of audience interaction and stuff. Mm-hmm. And obviously the mayor himself. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of very well put together, very eclectic as a piece. But the other thing I was noticing, and Quinn mentioned this earlier, was how, I mean, obviously it was 400 years to the day that it was originally performed, which I find amazing, and we talked about a lot on the day. But how inevitably it's going to be really wet and cold. Well, not necessarily inevitably, but how that's quite likely. And just how much in your speeches, hearing them four times, really hammered this home. You're talking about, a fair sky bless these undertakings and things like that. And you're talking about how you really hope it doesn't rain all the way through the show. And when we were performing inside in this air-conditioned room, we weren't thinking, the weather's going to impact this show at all. We were just thinking like, make sure we understand what we mean by a fair sky bless these undertakings. But live, it was clearly just a series of jokes that Middleton had very cleverly peppered in it, preempting bad weather, which I thought was brilliant. I thought these guys did so well coping with the weather and bringing it in. Like Quinn, you mentioned drooping earlier. I'd love to hear more about moments where, as performers, you were playing with the live audience or the live situation, if you can remember them.
My particular favourite moment was during the last time we ran it, like the third one, when it started raining and we all had to wear ponchos, because we were all posturing around in these huge, great medieval costumes. Like I had this sheep's mask and four like Game of Thrones furs over my shoulders, and I had this plastic bin bag over the top of it. I had to act all majestic and powerful, and I was basically wearing a bin bag. That was fun.
The top of the range bin bags.
Yeah, they were.
They were very good.
Specially purchased. Official Beyond Shakespeare ponchos.
Well, because Quinn is kind of the god of sheep, when he talks about these fine woolly creatures, everyone, like all the
musicians.
The musicians, like whipped out these amazing little toy woolly sheep. So I just absolutely loved. It's great.
Yeah, I did love the bit where I did love the bit where the bells would ring. Like in the bits where people were talking about noise. I think in one of the scripts. And the bell started ringing, so it was just the perfect moment. It felt really nice to just see that the world seemed to be cooperating at that precise moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there were a couple of times in the second and third performances when the bells went off mid-show, because for the listeners at home, the bow bells go off on the hour and give you lots of bonging.
Say, just keep on it. It's all the numbers going up. You're doing it right.
Excellent.
And that's
the second performance. It was just as the new standard was waking up. So it's like the trumpet to wake him up went, and then also the bell went at the same time. And it was a case of he kept trying to start his speech and couldn't.
Mm.
Whereas it was the second time when it went off midway through your speech.
Yeah.
I think it was basically. There was an folding of arms and disapproving look at which I think went down very well.
Yeah, that was really effective. I was really touched as well just by the mix of ages involved. That didn't come together until the day itself, and I don't know how historical that aspect of the process would have been, but it was really nice seeing how you guys kind of working with these older performers. I thought that was just a lovely intergenerational thing to be there for. Felt like community.
Okay, once again, please.
Okay. Testing!
Excellent, that's a good level.
Testing!
What?
Testing!
Shall we tell Rob, are you interested to hear about how we worked on their projection?
Oh, please do.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Do you remember what we did to get you to talk about it?
No. Oh, I remember we went against the wall and we'd be pushing whilst we said our lines to get our...
So we're engaging our core.
Yes.
Yes, Quinn.
What I remember was that we'd have to stand in here and do our speeches, and then you three, or the other three that weren't doing the speech, would have to stand outside through the glass, and you would constantly be going... It's radio, isn't it? You would constantly be holding your hand to your ear when you couldn't hear. So we'd have to literally scream our speeches just to be heard because the walls are so thick.
So we tried, we did the speeches through soundproofed glass.
Yes.
Wait, the glass is soundproof?
Well.
Basically, yeah. It's really
double glazing.
You did not tell me that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was basically our incredibly sophisticated acting technique, was just to say your speech through a wall. Yeah, it did. Yeah. Honestly, it transformed you. And I think, I remember you being quite shocked, all three of you, about how loud you would be required to be.
Yeah.
Like once we opened that door, I was like, this is the volume that you need. You're like, okay.
Yeah, this is going to be hard to keep going the whole performance.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you run out of air.
Yeah, especially,
especially
doing it three times as well.
Tina is also the stage manager and is also a very responsible person.
Will Valentina be able to have a brief chat with the young performers about entrances and exits? Because they just want to get that right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Entrances and exits for the youth. Do talk to Valentina. That is a great idea. Right, otherwise, whifflers assemble, so I can have all the whiffling team with me.
And then it's all over. And you have to go home, back to your normal life. Is there something that you think you'll take away from this for your future performances?
Well, it definitely helped me on my projection and breathing, but also realised how much I want to do another show with Sam Plum. It was so great to do that again.
Oh, thanks, Charlie.
Well, I think I'll take home the projection and the skills and stuff, but also some of the games we played that were helping us with our breathing and projection, and also just how we presented the lines and with the wall games and the things we played on the train. They're all really useful skills that you can do anywhere wherever you are.
I'll remember actually how to act in proper costumes, because I've never really done that before. All the theatre I've done has normally been I don't know, I remember one costume was shorts, waistcoat, shirt. They're not exactly difficult costumes, but then suddenly you're in this really heavy mask and really heavy furs and things, and it was really difficult to act in them, and I think I can probably do that better than I could 2 weeks ago now.
Yes, what did you think of your costumes? You would say you got the maximum fur option.
Yeah. I loved my red tights. I was very reluctant to let them go. I felt actually so cool walking through London with my red tights and my blue top. I just felt like I could rule the world in that.
Yeah, I had like it was really nice. I had like a green dress with this red cloak and a golden sash, but it was very long. So by the end of the three performances, it had gotten quite wet and heavy. So I feel like something I will take away from this is I'll have stronger arms because I would have to carry it for most of the time because it was quite a lot of fabric to carry.
It was brilliant. Quim, what did you think about your costume? You had a specific element to it, which is new.
Well, my mask. Mm. I've never worn a mask to act before. My neck muscles are now a lot stronger. It's huge. But it was fun to wear. The projection is a lot harder when you've got this big shelf of plastic. Was it plastic? Whatever.
Yeah,
on top of your mouth. Mm. But halfway through the second performance, you did kind of learn to get through it. The hardest part of the mask, actually, is constantly having to tie it on again because, of course, moving your mouth around loosens it.
Yeah.
And so after every scene, just to keep tying it back on. Mm. It's a pain. But they are fun to wear once you get the hang of them.
Mm. My take home is never underestimate your cast. The classic. You can sort of micromanage them using modern directing techniques, but then they will always kind of, well, I mean, these guys in particular, excel when it's happening live and have to figure out stuff on the spot in response to what is being thrown at them. And it was lovely. It was lovely how they went on a journey through the day and kept on finding solutions to all the new little challenges that were occurring, like when it rained at different places, when the bells rang at different places. I think you were managing audiences' focuses really well and how that was changing in the moment. And all of that is stuff we can't really rehearse for.
Many thanks to Charlie Beer, Holly Bartlett-Giles, Quinn Scott and Sam Plum for giving their time to this project and that interview. The interview was recorded at Chesterton Community College in November 2021. And that's it from the Lord Mayor's Show of 1621. We will return with more Lord Mayor's Shows later this year, and we're also going to be looking at the show from 1622 in some sort of live way. It's a trickier show to work with, and at time of recording, we're not sure what we're going to be doing with it precisely, but we do intend to mark the Lord Mayor's Show every single year in a multitude of ways. So watch this space. Or listen to the gap in the silence. Something like that. Till then, I've been your host, Robert Crichton, and this has been the Beyond Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Beyond Shakes. Visit our website at beyondshakespeare.org or support our work, please do, by becoming a patron at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, where you get all of this material early, as well as bonus material. I do readings of books. We look at Jess books. You get videos as well as the audio. You get a whole host of additional material. More, really, I think, than anyone can actually process. We probably produce far too much stuff. But never mind, it's all really good, and your support makes all this stuff happen. Without it, this podcast will wither and die. Or, if you can't support our work regularly, you can buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare, or you can like, subscribe, or review our work on whichever outlet you get from us. Get involved, even. We do exploring sessions online for free several days a week. You can always sign up, look for it on the website, beyondshakespeare.org, and yeah, you can join us. You can be one of us. Be one of us. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
We have at least two photographic evidences from Twitter.
Trumpet sheep.
Plus trumpet sheep. There will be trumpet sheep.
Trumpet sheep.
Yep.
Trumpet sheep.
Yep. Are those sheep on trumpets?
Did you say sheep?
Sheep on trumpets, not trumpet playing sheep.
Although I wouldn't bet on it.
I wouldn't put it past.